It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Welcome, everybody. It is Tuesday, November 10th, 2020, which means it's time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 165 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the galaxy. Your two hosts, myself, Maction, tech enthusiast, and my good friend and my comrade in gaming commentary, Mr. Lom Galuka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. We have a returning sponsor this week, Game Insider Magazine, and, well, we're going to take you on a one-hour journey for news, history issues, crowdfunding trivia, and lawsuits that are important to video games. But before that, Mr. Nice Guy, how you doing, man? How was your week?
Dude, I'm doing really good. I feel like quarantine has just become the norm. Like, I won't even say, like, I'm having a good time in quarantine, staying at home, because it's just life at this point, and I am loving it. Things are good. I've been playing a lot of new games this week, man. I can't say that I did anything crazy because it's really just been me at home, but I did try some new stuff I'm excited to tell the people about later, because some of the games I tried were based on what you said in the chat last week. So life is phenomenal, Mac. No smoking meat this weekend either, so I can't talk about that. But how about you, man? How was your week?
This week has been fantastic. I've kind of had the week off of work so that I can hang with some people IRL, and I am having a heck of a good time. Crafted a thing or two, for example. I've been wanting to add some new art.
What?
And so
you made that?
Because this is an audio medium, I should point out that what I have is I happen to have a Pikachu. And so what I did was incorporate some towels, some dampening material inside of a frame, stretched a shirt that had been pre-printed, so I didn't actually make the graphic, stretched that over it, and will be hanging it in this room to hopefully improve the audio quality of the podcast over time as I add more and make it a real expression of me, because I dislike how all of the sound dampening materials, it's just like, you know, black egg crate foam, or it's just these emotionless and silly panels. So something that, you know, not only serves a function, but also serves to be a canvas for who I am.
So here's what I got to know. Is that a Pikachu shirt that you were like, all right, I've had this, it's time to retire this shirt? Or is that a shirt that you purchased specifically for that project? You get what I'm saying?
I get exactly what you're saying. And it is a new shirt in the sense that I did purchase it for this express purpose. I got a triple XL because I wasn't exactly sure how much material I would need for it. Turns out I erred way too much on the side of caution, neither here nor there. But yeah, and it was on sale for $5. So hey, why not? There's a distinct lack of nerdiness and nerdy shirts around here. Please send help. So,
Well, Mac, in the post show, remind me, and I can tell you about a couple different websites where you can get some really dope shirts for like $6 each.
Sweet. Awesome.
It's a pretty cool website. Well, hey, on that note, I say we do what we do best. Unless you have more about your week, I kind of cut you off there. What else you got?
No, that's about it. But, you know, I haven't exactly been keeping up on the news. You know me, I'm not really in the now. So, Mr. Nice Guy, perhaps you would hop right into the gaming news and fill me in.
Let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is episode number 165. We're keeping it live here on Two Nerds in a Pod, Nerdiest Video Game Podcast in the Galaxy. We're going to talk about the most obvious thing first. Happy Xbox Day to all of the gamers who are into Xbox stuff. The Xbox Series X and the Xbox Series S both released today. And it's all I've been seeing on Twitter, Mac. And I just want to talk about it for a minute before I get into some of the news stories surrounding it. Let's talk impulse purchases. Have you ever, like, decided not to buy something, but then seen like, oh, all my friends are buying it and it looks dope. Now I feel like I want it. Has that ever happened to you before, or am I just weird? Because that's what's happening with the Xbox right now.
No, I don't think you're weird. I think that's perfectly normal. I, however, have risen above those base human impulses and ascended to a new level of gamer, one who just doesn't fall for that sort of thing.
See, and I'm not going to fall for it. I just feel like it was an effective marketing tactic by Xbox, because there's no way I'm going to buy a Series X. I have a PC. I have a Xbox One S. I have Game Pass. I can play every single game that's on the Series X until they come out with something that's exclusive, that's a killer app. And really, they need 3 or 4 exclusive games for me to drop $500 and get a new console, right? At least 3 or 4. I'm not going to pick it up. Now, I'm happy for those that are purchasing it. I'm not trying to hate on it. At this point, I'm just more into the PS5, and I don't really see a reason to get the Xbox. So, that said, Mac, let's talk impulse purchases, though, because I know you've made one in your life, right? What's like, the maybe not the worst, but just a memorable impulse buy that you ever did, if you can think about that? I can think of a couple that I regret just from 2020 alone. I'm looking at you, NBA 2K21 Mamba Edition. Should have got the regular edition. But Mac, anything that comes to mind?
I need a moment more to think about it. Please give us another impulse purchase that you regret from you as I get it.
Well, while you're doing that, we're actually going to get into some of the Xbox news. So here's the thing, and I want to know opinions from the chat on this. The Xbox Series X launch day restock is happening soon. This is on GameSpot.com. Now, update, it's obviously sold out because this was written earlier. But here's what it said. This is written by Janae Sitzes. Few retailers have shared concrete details about when they'll have the PS5 and Xbox Series X available to buy during launch week, and the Xbox Series X has already reappeared and sold at many stores in the early hours this morning. But thankfully, we know exactly when Walmart will have stock. The store shared specific start times for when you can buy the Xbox Series X/S today and the PS5 on Thursday. Now, here's what grinds my gears. You know what grinds my gears, Mac?
Tell me.
When retailers say that they don't have enough stock, right? They took a bunch of pre-orders, and they even had the audacity to cancel some of them. But then on launch day, they are now taking additional sales. I don't agree with that business practice. I think that that's wrong. I don't know if you disagree, but I don't think that's right.
I think it's very unfortunate, and I don't know if I would feel any sort of loyalty to such a establishment that did such a thing.
Well, you know what's interesting? Amazon did it. Best Buy did it. I believe Target did it, and I'm pretty sure Walmart's doing it too.
I have no loyalty to any of them.
I guess if they knew that they were going to have extra consoles available, they should have just done it as pre-orders. I don't get the point of making people wait till launch day thinking that, you know, they weren't going to get it, and then releasing them on launch day having a bunch of links. I follow Wario64 on Twitter, right? I also follow Video Game Deals on Twitter. And they both were tweeting out all morning long, like, hey, it's available on this site now. It's available on that site now. And that frustrated me, even though I didn't want one of these. I just don't think that's right. Just be transparent, retailers. Do y'all agree, chat? What do you think? Let us know. Mac, did you come up with that impulse buy? Or should we do a little bit more Xbox news, right?
No, I've been racking my brain, and I can't think of any impulse buys that I've made, aside from, like, the thing that I just barely put together. But, I mean, that's something I've been planning on doing for a while. It's just that I finally had the impetus. I don't know. I, like, restrain the impulse buys, unless we're talking, like, candy. Like, I will impulse buy candy.
Like, sometimes when I go to Chipotle, I feel like I get peer pressured into getting guac. You know what I mean? Just stuff like that. I'm like, yo, I don't need guac. There's already sour cream in here. There's already all these delicious veggies. It's plenty juicy. Do I really need guac? Am I even going to taste the guac in between the beans and the rice and the meat and the salsa and the corn and the tomatoes and the extra rice and the extra meat? I don't think I'm going to taste this guac. And then they're like, it's only $1. And I'm like, give me that guac. It's an impulse buy that I just can't stop doing. Chipotle, you've got me. Well, anyway, Mac, one more Xbox story, and I want to get your opinion on this because it kind of relates to computer stuff too, because it relates to storage. This is on IGN.com by Chris Reed. The official storage expansion cards for Xbox Series X and Series S are now available, and if you're lucky enough to get your launch Xbox Series X delivered on launch, you can now double its storage, Mac. These proprietary cards are made by Seagate. Mac, as you know, same people who make all types of external hard drives and other things. And they give you an extra 1 terabyte of memory that will allow load times to be just as quick as if they were installed on the console's onboard storage. The only hitch, Mac, is that these cards cost $219.99, but that's the price we have to pay for SSD performance, it says. What do you think about that, Mac? Doubling the storage of the Xbox, 1 terabyte of memory for $220. Good price, ripoff, thoughts?
Well, that seems a touch excessive, but what I'm comparing it to right off the top in my brain is just the general, you know, internal SSD drives. How much terrifyingly smaller is this? Are these, you know, these expansion drives? Are they like the size of a micro SD card? Do they have to have a special form factor?
I'm looking at a picture of one, and there's nothing for scale, but it looks to me that it's a substantial sized card, but it'll fit into the Xbox, I believe, or connect to the Xbox. I don't know. Here's my main holdup with this. It's $220 for a 1 terabyte, but you could get an actual Xbox Series S, which is the quote unquote digital only, like, lesser version of the console that comes with 512 gigabytes of storage for $299.
It's true.
So it's $80 more, you could get a whole nother console.
True, but you know? I mean, then that would really only be useful to keep around for LAN parties, because it'll only hold, what, 6 games? So keep that as your backup, maybe your travel version. I'm just saying, you know, without the storage, especially in the digital-only version, what are you going to do?
Well, I don't know. That's the thing, though. I feel like if you're going to charge $220 for just a 1 terabyte hard drive, but $299 for a 512 gigabyte console, I'm just going to get another console. You know what I mean? Now, Ishmobile in the chat says the Series S has 360 gigabytes usable, though. See, and I did not know that. So apparently there's some space that's taken up for just system stuff, right? Different programs and different things.
Mm-hmm.
And 360, that's not a lot, dude.
Yeah, that's not a lot. And Metz Girl brings up a good point. Travel version for all that in-person gaming we're doing in COVID times.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So I don't know. Xbox, you know, we love you. And I will say this. As a console agnostic gamer, meaning I'm not loyal to any one console. I'm not a fanboy. I love them all. I will eventually get an Xbox Series S. But there has to be some stuff on there that I can't already play, and that is probably exclusive. So we'll see what they end up doing with Bethesda, Mac, because you remember a couple weeks ago we talked about how they purchased Bethesda, Skyrim, Fallout, Wolfenstein, Doom. And so we'll see if all that stuff becomes exclusive to Xbox, which who knows, it might.
Indeed, and for anybody who doesn't remember that conversation from a few episodes back, they did expressly say that anything that was already planned to go for this console or that console would continue to go to those consoles. So if you were expecting this thing for PS5, it would still go there, even though, you know, Bethesda is now owned by Microsoft. So at the very least, for the current outstanding builds of games, those are still going to wherever they were going before.
Air Wilson in the chat, he gives us a different perspective. He says, I usually only have 3 to 4 games, so I should be good on storage with the Series S. And maybe that's really who it's for, Mac. Maybe it's for the casual gamer, like Air Wilson, our good friend of the show, who, you know, he buys NBA 2K. You know, maybe he buys a shooter, and he's just cycling through games. You know, it's not for people like me who are using Game Pass. Although I actually think it is for people who are using Game Pass. But maybe it's more for people who just play a couple core games and they aren't constantly switching between stuff and having to re-download and delete to make space. So anyway, just a thought. We're hyped for Microsoft. Congratulations on the launch. I can't wait to see what else you have in store. Mac, a couple more news stories and then we'll keep things moving. This is about Twitch. This is on GameSpot.com by Jenny Zhang. In a replacement for the canceled TwitchCon, Twitch will host a 12-hour online event called GlitchCon. It starts at 9 a.m. Pacific time on November 14th. With over 425 Twitch creators participating, GlitchCon has packed in the programming. Events that make up the online convention include a small-scale esports event with Twitch creators, a cosplay contest, a masked celebrity game, and a Twitch chat game jam, and a virtual artist alley. The event will close with a concert session hosted by T-Pain and features music from Twitch musicians.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
I know that T-Pain was relevant when he sang about being on a boat with The Lonely Island. But is this the first time he's been relevant since? You know me, I keep up on the musicians, so I already know the answer, but I'm curious to hear yours.
So let's give a little hip-hop education. It's time for hip-hop history, a new segment.
For people in the chat, obviously, those people, and you listening at home, this is for your benefit.
Someone in the chat just said who, and I don't know how you don't know who T-Pain is. That's a crying shame. I won't name you on the stream because that'd be embarrassing. But anyway, T-Pain, you know, he was a decent musician. He was really doing some big things. He was using a method called auto-tune, Mac, where he was altering his voice and it made it sound echoey. It made it sound high. And so people kind of said, you know what? Your music is only good for ringtones on phones. You're not a real musician, blah, blah, blah.
Auto-tune. Does that happen to be the technique pioneered by Cher in her song Believe? Do you believe in life after love?
I never thought about that, but having heard that song, I believe that could be, because her voice is kind of altered in that.
But
so yeah, it really could be.
But I can't break through, there's no talking to you. So
maybe not, because you just did it with no auto-tune and it sounded exactly the same.
Oh,
so maybe
stop it. Stop.
So maybe not. Point being, he's making a comeback. He was on The Masked Singer season one. He won, and I believe he's trying to like recreate his career. So that's who T-Pain is. Go Google him if you don't remember him. Thank you, Mets Girl, for the Twitch Prime sub. We appreciate you. And Mac, all I wanted to ask you about this TwitchCon is gaming conventions. We've been to them in the past. Do you have any interest in attending them virtually like you would have in person when we used to do that? Just curious.
Oh, man.
Or is it not the same vibe?
There is something. I've said it before about things like Black Friday, which is coming up. There is a certain energy to in-person events, a magnetism in the air. I don't know what it is, but it's hard to replicate those in an online setting. And nothing that I've heard so far from the brief pitch has interested me, although I mean, I would have been very inclined to go to an in-person event if there were one and if, well, things were different.
Yeah, exactly, dude. I honestly, I don't think E3 is ever going to be the same just because it was getting overcrowded, but I want to do PAX again once this is all over in 5 years, right? If they still do PAX. We'll see. Last news story of the week. This is about Sony, the good men and women at Sony. This is by Steve Watts on GameSpot.com. With the PS5 just days away, Sony has detailed how it plans to dole out PlayStation Plus rewards going forward. While it seems as if the service will continue to focus on giving out PS4 games for the immediate future, it seems to be aiming at adding PS5 games to the rotation in the long term. That story is as simple as it sounds, right? They're going to be giving out PS4 stuff. They've already been giving out like the best PS4 games. They've been giving out Uncharted. They've given out Bloodborne. What else? Batman Arkham, I believe, was on there at one point, or maybe that was on Game Pass, I forget. Bottom line, Sony puts these games out, these first-party titles, and then a couple years later, you're getting them for free, right, as part of, in quotations, as part of your subscription. Mac, is there anything on PC where they're giving you, like, a catalog of games for being a member? I can't think of anything. I've been reading about the Humble Bundle, and that's, to me, the closest thing, getting games for a really good price. Are you familiar with any such service for PC gamers?
I know every so often on Steam, you'll have some games that'll be free to play for a weekend or some such like that. But yeah, Humble Bundle's kind of the only thing I can think of that comes close. And, you know, obviously you're purchasing the bundle, so it's not really a membership thing. But
yeah,
that
exactly.
Being said, Game Pass, right? Those...
Well, that's true, because that can be on PC. Absolutely. Good point.
Yeah, so, but I mean, obviously we necessarily associate the Game Pass with the Xbox, so it just kind of feels like it's a console thing, so, yeah. Ishmobile is pointing out that Origin is a subscription. Pay and play all their games, but if you stop paying, you lose it.
Okay, good to know. Origin. Awesome. Well, last point of this story is simply the fact that their first two PS5 games to PS Plus will be Bugsnax, available on launch day, and Destruction All-Stars is coming as a bonus when it launches next year. That has been our news for the week.
As a brief aside, when we welcomed Lauren from She Plays Games podcast.
Yep.
She had said that Bugsnax was a fantastic game and worth picking up ASAP. Just so you know, it's a good one. Well, now that we've taken a look at the stuff that's going on right now, let's take a look into the past with some video game history. I'm going to start with the more recent and work our way back. I've got three things that occurred this week in years before. Starting in 2011, we saw the release of Skyrim for the PC. And if I were to go on to explain all the different platforms where Skyrim was launched and all the ways in which that was big news as it continually launched, we would be here for the entire hour. Although I think my favorite release of Skyrim is absolutely the Alexa version. And I encourage everybody who has a favorite Skyrim release to let us know about that in the chat, because, well, I mean, we could all land on a different one and it would all be equally valid, as it is clearly best game ever.
Mac, why do you hate Skyrim so much? I never really, like, interrupt during gaming history, but Skyrim was great. Like, I feel like it was a phenomenal game. There was so much to do. It was buggy. It's one of the biggest, most expansive games ever made.
Untrue.
Okay, let's hear your counterpoint, because it is. Like, that's objectively true, what I said.
No, Daggerfall is a significantly larger game, and that's
years before.
I said
one of the most expansive,
okay,
large-scale games ever made.
Okay.
Skyrim.
If you said one of, I'll let it go. I will also mention that I believe Morrowind has more books inside, has more text inside of the books contained within it than I believe Skyrim does. So even more expansive in that. But, you know, okay.
If you want to start a book club, go get Morrowind. If you want to play a video game and have some fun, get Skyrim. I think we're in agreement.
I don't have anything so much against Skyrim, but the fact that every time it got re-released, it somehow wound up being front page news, and it somehow wound up being, like, practically a launch title for every new thing for the next X number of years, and people bandied it about as if that was something. And, I mean, people were even bringing that up, I forget the last thing that it launched on, but people were bringing it up years after, like 4 or 5, probably even 6 or 7 years after. They were like, hey, this thing's gonna launch, and it's gonna have Skyrim on launch. And it's just like, great, a 7-year-old game. Good for you.
Let's be fair here, because the exact same thing is happening with Grand Theft Auto 5.
Oh, right? True.
It came out on the PS3, Xbox 360. They moved it to the PS4, Xbox One S and X. Right, and now they're going to release it as a free title on the PlayStation 5, so it's spanned 3 generations.
Okay, but has it been put out there as a, like, we will launch with this game and that's big news?
For the PlayStation 5, yeah, a little bit, because they're saying, hey, you, if you have PS Plus, you get it free on PlayStation 5, and you get some virtual currency, and additionally, everyone who's playing right now on PlayStation 4 is getting 1 million in GTA currency leading up to the launch of it on PlayStation 5, so they're really pushing it hard, but I still see your point, Mac, about Skyrim.
Well, and I'm probably not being fair on the GTA 5 side of things, so I'm perfectly willing. You know what? We'll call it a draw.
Deal. Love you, buddy.
I love you, too. And with that being said, we'll go a few years back to 2004 and the release of Halo 2 for the original Xbox. Now, naturally, I played it again recently when I played it on PC via the Halo Master Chief Collection, and it was delightfully enjoyable. And I also have it. I still have the disc, and I have my original Xbox in the other room, and I just really thought that Halo 2 was, I mean, the bar was so high set with the original Halo. I mean, in so many ways, it kind of broke what we thought a first-person shooter could be, would be.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And the multiplayer? Oh,
ooh,
man.
Wee.
Rockets Only? I'm sure I've mentioned the tales of Rockets Only Christmas morning, but so I won't repeat that here, but Halo 2 was a pretty darn good successor. I wound up not really using the dual weapon system that was implemented because I preferred to have, you know, to have grenades ready to go and melee attacks, but man, still, a good good, worthy successor in Halo 2.
Yeah, for sure.
In 1981, there was a little arcade in Autumna, Iowa, that would serve as the foundation for video game esports. I'm talking, of course, the opening of the doors of Twin Galaxies. For those of you who are a little less familiar, for a long period of time, Twin Galaxies served as, at first, a kind of unofficial and then definitely a more official repository for scores. Back in those days, we were talking mostly arcade games and the like. It grew over time, hosting competitions there. Obviously, we know Twin Galaxies now has grown, changed, adapted a bit with the times, and I've even mentioned it multiple times in legalese, as there's been plenty of legal hoopla surrounding it.
Yep, absolutely.
But there are some events in video game history that you're just like, objectively, we're better off for this having happened, and I feel like that's definitely one of them. We'll go ahead and leave that for video game history for tonight.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about the topic of the week, a time where we talk about the hottest story, not even the hottest story, but one of the most important stories in gaming and give our opinions on it. Mac, let's talk about Fortnite today. How do you feel about that? Let's talk a little bit about Fortnite.
Okay.
We're not going to get too deep into the game. We're going to get more deep into the business decisions that they may or may not be making. This is on GameInformer.com by Liana Rupert. Fortnite has evolved immensely since the Save the World and Battle Royale made its debut, with countless concerts, crossovers, and rotating events. Mac, did you know they do concerts in Fortnite now?
Yes, I had heard that Marshmello did himself a thing in there. Yes, I am familiar with Marshmello, such a great DJ?
DJ, disc jockey, right?
Nailed it.
You got it. You got it. Max getting more and more hip every day. The online title continues to change and further grow in its potential, and it looks like that growth could encompass a subscription model. Surprisingly, gamers didn't seem to hate that idea. A survey from Epic Games has been making the rounds on the internet, questions regarding what fans want to see in the future. The below Reddit post shows off a portion of the survey in which Epic asks if Fortnite players would be, I think it means to say open, into the idea of a subscription model that includes the following three things, Mac. The current season pass, an exclusive outfit for subscribers, a monthly stipend of 1,000 V-Bucks, the in-game currency. According to the survey, the monthly cost would come out to $14 a month. Mac, to give you some perspective, the current season pass for Fortnite, I believe it's $10 a month. So for $14 a month, you're getting that season pass. You're getting 1,000 V-Bucks, which I believe is also about $10 or $8, something like that. And you're getting a custom skin. Here's my question for you. If you were into a game, whatever game it is, right? And it's a game that's constantly evolving. It's a game as service, and it's been free since it launched several years ago. And then all of a sudden, they say, hey, we're going to introduce a subscription model. What would your reaction be? Would you gladly pay to support? Would you be frustrated that they're making it not free to play? How would you feel?
I would be less than thrilled about the change. Yeah, I could see people being upset about this. I'm surprised that there isn't hate.
And that's the thing. Like, they actually did a survey, and the gamers seem to be okay with it. So here's my perspective. When I was, like, I study different marketing methods for comedy, right? And I once heard someone who's kind of an expert marketer say that the best way to build a name for yourself is to release your comedy for free. Like, once you get to the point that you're good enough to record something, a CD, a DVD, whatever, just put it out there for free. Start a YouTube channel. That's what we do with this pod. It's free entertainment. We have a solid group of people who come here every single week. We also have a solid group of people in the chat who also subscribe to our channel. And I believe that it's one, because they like us, but two, because we've provided them with value. And I feel like that's what Fortnite has done. Value in the form of entertainment, right? We hang out, we're friends, is all I'm saying, right? And see, someone in the chat just said it means that we love you. And that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Metzger. That's very kind to say. Point being, we're getting so off topic, but point being, after a while, you want to give people your money, right? Like, when I watch Twitch, unless I'm watching someone every day, I'm not going to give them any money because it's free entertainment. However, if someone who I know has been giving me entertainment for a long time is now doing a stream for charity like Extra Life this weekend, I'll absolutely throw a few dollars your way. because you've provided me with a lot of value, and I know you, I feel like I know you. You're a good person, and you've given me some entertainment for a long time. Fortnite has been a staple in the gaming community, and they've continuously updated their game to the point that when I log in once every 3 months out of curiosity, I immediately get mad. Because, oh, now there's airplanes? Now there's lightsabers? Now there's freaking, you can revive your, unless you're keeping up with it, you just don't know. And the people who are keeping up with it have gotten so much value these past 3 years of them giving out their quote unquote comedy special for free. Now they're willing to pay the comedian, right? Or pay the game maker for the future stuff. That's where we're at. I mean, they've found a winning formula. They've got a group of people who are going to grow up and continue to play this for a long time of all ages. And now they're monetizing even more than they have before. And I think it's a smart business move. And I think that they've gotten enough goodwill that people are willing to do it. To kind of answer my original question, how would I feel if a game that I was paying for free, right? Or that I was playing for free eventually wanted to charge? I probably would be frustrated just because I'm cheap about that kind of stuff. That's it for me. But I don't know. People are willing, so why not charge them?
And to be clear, I mean, sure, people say that they're willing, but, you know, sometimes people feel differently when it's actually a... Because people tend to think it won't be me who's shouldering that cost often. We've got tons right. of that kick it down the road type of thinking in just human beings in general. So I wouldn't be surprised if, sure, a lot of people might say, oh, yeah, sure, I'd be willing to go for something like that, but yet... Probably, yeah, but wouldn't be necessarily willing to go for it when the time comes. I don't know. I wish all the Fortniters the best of luck in whatever the future holds for them and their beloved franchise.
And it sounds like this will be optional, just to kind of put a pin in this. I don't think they're going to force people to pay to play, but I believe that you can then get that subscription $15 a month and do it, which frankly, no different than what World of Warcraft has done for over a decade.
Sure. I think the, you know, like you said, the difference comes in, you know, what your opening expectation might have been. But, you know, hey.
Well, that has been our topic of the week.
Well, now let's take a look at a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off of the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart because we're going to discuss the project. We're going to talk some of the virtues and the vices. You will all be seeing this for the first time, as with Mr. Nice Guy here. But we'll, you know, we'll chat about it, and then we'll say whether or not we think it should be kicked out of here or whether it should be kickstarted. So here is a here's the link in the chat. The name of this is Dyson's Sphere Program. So Dyson's Sphere is this it's an old sci-fi thing about building basically a sphere, a bubble around a sun to capture all of the energy. And in certain cases, it's taken on a bunch of different flavors. Sometimes it's been, the Dyson Sphere is built around it at, like, say, the habitable general area, and the, you know, civilization lives on the inside of the sphere. Sometimes it's just channeling all the energy from the star. But anyway, what this comes down to is this comes down to being a sort of a sandbox sci-fi, game for you to build a sci-fi, you know, build a sci-fi society, as it were. Build, I don't know, mechs and fly around the universe inside of that game. It looks promising. They're looking for $10,000 to get the project completed. And if you're curious about getting a copy of the game, a $31 minimum buy-in for a March 2021 release on Steam and Steam only. I see the face you're making. We're coming back to it, I promise. Because that is a bit of a high price for
it
a
is.
Minimum buy-in.
Absolutely. Absolutely it is.
Yeah. Especially on, this is a group, Youth Cat Studio is the name of it, and while their Kickstarter profile does say two created, that's just because one, the other creation, was the exact same project, but just, it looks like they launched it and then canceled it because they might have hit the button a little too early. But I mean, that's no, it could happen to the best of us, so no judgments here. But it is their first Kickstarter that they're putting out there. Mr. Nice Guy, any initial reactions?
I honestly have no idea what this is about. Even though you just explained it. I don't know what this game is about.
Sure, so it's meant to be a little bit more like a sci-fi civilization game, or one of those
okay.
expansion and resource exploitation games, and but it focuses a lot on the sort of, you know, instead of starting off with a settler, you know, you're starting off with stuff a little bit more high-tech. And I believe, if I understand it correctly, the idea is that the building the Dyson sphere, you know, is the pinnacle of what you're trying to accomplish. So you're certainly okay. sci-fi progressing for that goal.
Okay. So, I don't know what to say, because it's just not something that's very narrow. It's something that is very broad.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they've already gotten, what, halfway there, 40% of the way there?
Mm-hmm.
And they have 39 days to go. So it's not so broad that they can't find an audience. But I just don't think that it's narrow enough to have critical success. Now, here's the thing. To use an analogy from comedy, you don't have to have critical success to make a living, right? Or to be happy. You can be a niche comedian and just find your audience and just go with that audience. And I think that's what they need to do here, is just find the people who are really into this stuff hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
Just get them into this game and just maintain that audience of people. Because I don't think this is ever going to be a Celeste.
Mm-hmm.
Or a Last of Us Part 2. It's not going to be a game that's game of the year. Especially not at $31. I mean, really? At $31 for something in early access? Now, it's been done before, but it's been done for games that had more broad appeal, right? Games mm-hmm. like H1Z1 we were talking about earlier. So that's kind of my thoughts on it. And I just feel like, as a casual observer, this isn't really clear about what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've had a little bit more time to dig into some of the aspects of it that have given me pause for thought. For one, of course, that high minimum buy-in, kind of problematic. They say that they already have a publisher on board to publish the game, so it's going to be made, and that the Kickstarter is more to help them get the money in order to add more functionality, which I have strong feelings about doing that. I feel like Kickstarter, much in the same way that I feel like if you're a celebrity, you shouldn't have a podcast, not because you don't have interesting things to say, but because you have front channels and podcasting's the back channels. It's for
so
the
Mac,
nobodies
what?
Like me.
Well, you know what? I've already argued with you enough.
I know.
I'll let that one go for the sake of time.
Thank you. That being said, I feel much in the same way. I don't want you, if you've already got a publisher out there, I don't want you to be coming to Kickstarter to grab, you know, to get more capital if you've already got that secured. I mean, you know, make your case for more money from the publisher up front to get it done, not coming to me. Also, they do say that it's already in alpha and it will go to early access sometime before the release on March 2021. March 2021 is not that far away. It's already ready to be in alpha. When's that going to drop? At the end of the Kickstarter?
What does alpha mean? What does alpha mean?
That playable, potentially.
I know what it means literally, but is alpha going to be like, oh yeah, you guys can kind of play it, but it's going to crash. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. But here's the thing. One thing I haven't seen before in a Kickstarter is that if you want beta access, they're apparently not really giving anybody, it's apparently right now, as of this Kickstart, in alpha access, there's no playable demo. And I mean, that's, you know how I feel about that. But if you want beta access, which they didn't list when it's going to start, you have to buy in at the $200 level, well, $191, in order for you to get beta access, requiring you to agree to an NDA and limited to only 20 people for the beta access. And whereas I am a big fan of resource management sims and 4X games, I think this would, even with a playable demo, that kind of thing would certainly make it a hard pass for me.
This is absurd. This is absurd. $191 to... Are you kidding me?
To get access to the game sometime between now and March, because March is the supposed release date. So
you get the game like 4 months early.
Maybe.
For $191.
Maybe.
When you know what you could do? You could pay $15 a month and get Xbox Game Pass and get access to all of those games on a rotating basis.
Possibly, potentially. Who knows?
Instead.
I just know that for me, this, I want to love it. I want to like it. I like the sci-fi aspect, but definitely a kick it from me in spite of how interesting it might be.
I would pay $191 to the best kicker in the NFL to pick up this Kickstarter and kick it through the goalposts and then go step on it. Because this is, I know we want to be supportive of people trying to make it, but come on. $191 to get beta access, for four months, $31 to get the game that's on Steam only.
To be one of the lucky 20 who will get beta access.
For $191, right. Have any of those sold? Just curious.
Yes.
I'm not going to tear this apart anymore.
Sure.
I hope that his mom enjoys that beta access that she bought.
Sure.
But I can't in good conscience encourage anybody to purchase this or to kickstart this.
Nope, I hear what you're saying. But that's been Kick or Kickstart, and for the most part, the response has been somewhat underwhelming. The best anybody gets is a soft Kickstart on this one. So that's been Kick or Kickstart for this week.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time for... some trivia, a segment that we like to call Nerdflex.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host, and sometimes you do. Sometimes we get clean swept, but not very often. Well, let's do this. We're waiting for some questions to come in. We will start with one question from the test bank, and then if anyone has a multiple choice question they'd like to, video game related, that they'd like to put in the chat, please do. But Mac, let's start with one from... Okay, we're not going to get this, but we'll try. It's a Mario question.
Ooh.
Which Mario Kart game does Mario exclaim, "Okie dokie, Mario get you next time"?
It's definitely not. If it's a Mario Kart game, it's definitely not the first one.
Right.
I don't remember that ever coming up in Mario 64. And so it could be Mario, what, Double Dash was the GameCube. There was one for Wii, there's been a few for DS, and then, you know, there's Mario Kart 8 that we're on right now. So
yeah. So I feel like it's got to be either the Wii, Double Dash, or 8. I feel like, because I know it wasn't one of the early ones.
I think I'm going to have to go for Double Dash on that one, just because I feel like, well... no, probably Mario Kart Wii. I feel like Wii would have had... you know, we would have been most likely to have some voice stuff.
Yeah. And I don't remember hearing this on Mario Kart 8, which I've played a good amount of with my kids and just by myself too, because it's a dope game. So I'm going to go with, Wii as well. Mario Kart Wii. Final answer. Let's see it. Oh my gosh, dude. It's Mario Kart 64.
What? Really?
We got to look that up. Someone in the chat said Super Mario 2. That's not a Mario Kart game. But we appreciate you. Dang, who would have thought? I didn't know there was any... Well, I'm sure there was voice in it, but I didn't think that was in it. Anyway, it was, apparently. And you know what? Everyone's being shy this week, Mac, which is totally cool. We're just going to have to go with test bank questions tonight.
Yeah, it's true.
Everyone is being shy in the chat, and that is okay.
Nobody seems to want the honor of being... the ones to stump us. So
they want us to get stumped by this test bank.
Clearly.
That's okay. So here's the next question. Hey, what do you know? It's a Pokemon question, so I'm going to have to lean on you for this one. Which Pokemon is said to be present near natural disasters? Now, natural is in quotes, if that helps.
Mm-hmm.
But
I seem to recall that in the Pokedex, it says something about Diglett's being present near landslides. Landslide yep. fits for a natural disaster, so I think it's Diglett.
Diglett is the first one that came to my mind because I remember something about rocks like falling. You know, because Diglett's like a rock Pokemon, right?
It's a ground type, but ground type.
So I was thinking either Diglett or what's the one Machamp?
But that's a fighting type. There's like a there are a couple rock ones like Geodude, Graveler, you know. So those would be the okay. rock types, Onix and the like, but.
Onix, yeah, that's another one, but I don't think it was Onix. Let's go with Diglett. Okay, I've never heard of this Pokemon. It's Absol.
That's from a generation that I do not remember.
Why don't we do this? Galvatron has a question that's not multiple choice. He wants to put it in the chat. Do we want to take Galvatron's? I say we just take Galvatron's question.
Okay, we will roll the dice, Galvatron. Go for it.
If it's ridiculous... we will veto it, but if it's a reasonable question, so, then we will absolutely give it a shot. So get that in the chat.
Spenis, our Pokemaster, does say, though the Pokemon Absol can predict natural disasters, it's not known whether or not they are present in natural disasters. So
we're 0 for 2.
Oh, Metzgirl comes in clutch with a question, multiple choice, too.
Read that for us.
What kind of gas do you collect in StarCraft? Is it 1, Cloud, 2, Vespine, 3, Mesa, or 4, Red? I know the answer to this one.
Do you?
I do.
What is it?
it's B, Vespine gas. That's the gas from StarCraft. And you know what? I think we can also answer this one from Galvatron as well, because what gaming product did Nintendo originally make at its company's inception? And that would have been playing cards. It made playing cards, I believe, birch on birch wood. So, excellent. And Vespine Gas is correct.
Galvatron, let us know if playing cards is the correct answer as well. And so let's just assume we went 2 for 4 and let's just keep things moving, right?
Yeah.
That has been Nerdflex. Get us some questions next time. We appreciate y'all.
All right. So now we're going to talk a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
And so what we are going to talk a little bit about today happens to be tattoos. So if you will recall, we've covered the previous tattoo-related video game lawsuits in episodes 95, 97, and I think we did a revisit in around episode 126. So I won't rehash the lawsuit surrounding players in NBA 2K, notably LeBron James's tattoos and the like and all that. But there is another one. Another lawsuit going on, and the short version, the items in the case are relatively the same. It's almost an identical case, just a different game, made even by 2K, because it's the WWE game that's going on, that they're doing. There's a lawsuit about the tattoos and likenesses in there. And most of the facts of the case are very, very similar, a slight difference in the type of group who is bringing the case, and interestingly enough, the ruling has kind of gone the opposite way, even though the facts are very similar. And I wanted to mention this because it's a good time to always remind people that when you have cases, often judges will try and yield to previous decisions, but judges are not bound to decisions that were made in districts outside of their own. So whereas one of these happened in the Southern District of Illinois, which is the Seventh Circuit, this other one's happening in New York, which is the Ninth Circuit. And so, you know, they are essentially equal weighted courts. They're like kind of the same level. But, you know, you could certainly pull on the decisions in one court and yet just instead opt to go your own way if you thought the circumstances were different. And that's, in fact, the way that they've gone. The three things that they were, of course, deciding on, they were talking about the implied license. And as a subset of being an in real, you know, an IRL person who's being depicted, they're like, yeah, maybe there's an implied license here. And instead of giving, you know, one party a summary judgment to just kick it out of here, like they did in the other case, this one, they're going to let it go to court. Number two, the fair use doctrine consideration. Again, these should sound familiar because they're the exact same beats brought up in the previous case. The bar for successful fair use defense is kind of high, and so the court did note, however, that the art of creating a tattoo naturally entails a creative and expressive effort, giving the tattoos legitimate copyright protections under federal law. So this is a situation where it was, again, it was like, well, we're going to let the jury decide on this. And then the third was the de minimis use, which is, you know, how much of this is really going on. And they're like, well, in the WWE, there of the roster, there's only a few handful of people that have these tattoos that are at issue, and it is unlikely that they would show up in, say, every one of your play sessions. So it's really a much smaller portion of the whole, you know, of the whole game. So yeah, this seems kind of minimal, but, you know, these are all kind of wobbler cases, and we're going to let this go forward instead of giving summary judgment and dismissing it. We're going to let this go through to the, to an actual jury. So, a very similar case, different district, and it looks like we're going to get a different result, and we're actually going to have a jury trial. And this is good for us as gamers, and it's good for game makers, because this might likely, if it goes to jury, we have more arguments, we have more back and forth, we have an actual jury ruling, we might get something that serves as a bit more precedent that can be better applied to other cases, and either, say, maybe make these cases more frequent or less frequent, as the case may be. Anyway, I'm rambling. We're way too early on in the stage for us to have too much, but it's kind of cool to see something go the exact opposite way in very similar circumstances. But I digress. That's just some legalese for you.
Fan-freaking-tastic. Well, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to episode number 165 of Two Nerds in a Pod. Before we go, we have one last job to do. We talk about what we've been watching, what we've been playing, and if you're here too, you have a job to do here live. Let us know in the chat what nerdy stuff you've been watching on Netflix, on Hulu, on YouTube, all over the place. Let us know what games you've been playing on your shiny new Xbox, your old rusty Nintendo that's seen many battles with the controller. Let us know the games you're into, because we're always looking for cool nerdy stuff to get into. Mac, I'll go ahead and go first this week while we wait for people to type stuff in the chat. So last week we had two people in the chat when we were talking about Game of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what's your Game of the Year, personally? And two people said Doom Eternal. It's not a game that I had played. It's a game that was recently added to Xbox Game Pass. And I took both of their advice. I downloaded Doom Eternal because I have the subscription. It was okay. I'll be honest with you guys. It was okay. And it just goes to show that just because a game is great doesn't mean it's for everyone. It was not for me. I'll give it a second shot later this week, but I don't think it's a Game of the Year candidate. I'm glad that some of you do. What else have I been playing? I did a little bit more of Half-Life. Alex, I'm taking it slow, Mac.
Mm.
I'm taking it one bite at a time and spreading it out, because it's that type of game you can only experience once. I just hit chapter 6. It's 11 chapters. I'm about halfway through. And Hades. I did a few runs of Hades and a couple other games, but that was mostly it. As far as what I have been watching, woo-wee, you know I've been watching The Mandalorian. You know I've been watching The Mandalorian, and I'm not going to talk about it for people who haven't seen it. But I also finished season one of Cobra Kai, and that is a phenomenal series. I still feel like it's Breaking Bad meets Freaks and Geeks, and I know you made a funny face when I said that. But I just think that that's how I would describe the mesh. Because it's like two genres, right? Like, you have the high school kid aspect, right? But then you also have, like, the gritty, like, adult making tough decisions, having a difficult life, mm-hmm. right, type. And so it's kind of like you get the best of both worlds. So I've really been enjoying that. And I've been doing other stuff too, but that's enough for the sake of the show. How about you, buddy?
Well, I played a round of Mega Man 2 to show off. I participated in the cooperative playing of an NES game called Time Lord. Interesting. I might revisit it because it's kind of a short game, but an interesting game. And it's got a timer for the game. Like, you know, you have to beat the whole game in under a certain period of time. It's an interesting, interesting experiment.
Sounds like it.
I played some Pump It Up, you know, that's my dancing game. And I've been playing a little bit of Chasm. I received a challenge from a fellow player who was like, hey man, it's been quiet on the leaderboards for the past little bit. You need to come back and give me a run for my money. And so I said, okay. And that's what I've been playing. I mean, well, of course, you know, my tabletop addiction has to be fed.
GURPS.
So GURPS and some 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons as well on the weekends. As for what I've been watching, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but most notably, finally watching Hamilton.
Finally!
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Are you watching it on Disney?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
Nice. Fantastic.
So it is...
Watch The Mandalorian as well. I'm just saying. I know you'd like it.
Well, my guest has been so kind as to provide. So I don't know as I will be making it through The Mandalorian, but I will say that I will make it through Hamilton, and it's been delightful so far. I can see what everybody liked so much about it. So,
yeah,
but that's
killer.
Me.
It's killer. Awesome. Well, let's see what people are into in the chat, Mac. Why don't you lead off?
Absolutely. That? I will take care of watching. Mets Girl is watching The Good Place, Hamilton, Arrested Development, Umbrella Academy, and IT Crowd. I will say Umbrella Academy, good first season. I felt like the second season was even better.
Ooh, really? That's rare.
Ishmobile is watching Ant-Man, Pride and Prejudice, and The Queen's Gambit. And we have Rolf watching The Boys season 2 and Game of Thrones. And I did seasons 1 and 2 of The Boys not that long ago. We will talk more about that together, Rolf. But that's what people have been watching.
Nice. As far as what people have been playing, we got Ishmobile playing some Super Mario World and Detroit Become Human. He and I talked about that, and I've got to give that game a shot. It's on PS Plus Library. I got to get into it. Mets Girl playing Dungeons & Dragons, GURPS, Minecraft, and Time Lord. Oh, and Ishmobile also playing GURPS. Ralph has been playing Crusader Kings 3. He says that's his game of the year. And I can't wait to do the game of the year discussion because I've looked at reviews of that game. It's on Game Pass. We'll talk about that later, Ralph. No Man's Sky and Slay the Spire as well. Mets Girl also played 5-Minute Dungeon and Trogdor the board game. Oh, and Pump It Up. And Air Wilson is talking about the consoles. So that's it for stuff that we have been watching and playing. Mac, I will take us home, my man, unless there's anything else you want to say to the people.
No. Thanks for being awesome.
Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed what you heard today, leave a like, leave a subscription, leave all that good stuff that the internet loves. See you here next week. Same bat place, same bat time, same bat rhymes. Keep it nerdy, y'all. Deuces.
See ya.